Did you know that Fangoria has been at it for over 40 years and is better than ever? This magazine is not only gorgeous, it's highly collectible and delivered right to your front door 4 times a year, each issue filled to the brim with articles exploring every nook and cranny of genre filmmaking, past, present, and future, with all the most exciting journalists, filmmakers, and horror know-it-alls to guide the way, including little old me from time to time. I have an essay in this newest issue that might make you a little sad, but it's good. It's me doing a little tribute to Scott Wampler and talking about how our mutual love of Stephen King has kind of helped me through the last crazy few months since he passed. I promise it's not all sad at all points, but you want to read it. I think it's good. I like it, but I wrote it, so I'm biased. Anyway, this high-quality writing will only ever appear within the physical pages of the magazine, so if you want to join in on the fun, well, you're going to need to subscribe, and in order to do that, all you got to do is head on over to Fangoria.com and sign up. And since KingCast is in the Fango family, you can save a whopping 25% off of your order if you use the code KingCast at checkout. That's code KingCast at Fangoria.com. Now on with the show.
Hi. My name is Stephen King.
He's gonna break!
Bedlam!
Bedlam! You guys want to go see a dead body?
Well, sometimes that is better.
Hello and welcome back to the KingCast on the Fangoria Podcast Network. My name is Eric Vespi and I am your host. So our guest today is the one and only Flula Borg. Say hello to the people, Flula.
Hello to the people. How are you, everyone? Hello.
This is usually the point where we do a big introduction and I'll list off all your credits and, yeah, you know, I'll do like the big ones, your Pitch Perfects, and okay, do like the Jokey and Pitch Perfect, Bumper in Berlin. And,
yes,
you know, everybody's got to know you from this one thing you did in this one corner of your filmography. That's kind of funny to mention, but you are kind of a KingCast royalty at this point. I would say if there was a Mount Rushmore of KingCast guests,
yes,
you might have worked your way into there.
Like a 20-head Mount Rushmore, then maybe I'm in there. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I will say when we decided, you know, we were going to screen something in remembrance of Mr. Scott Wampler at his memorial, like, yes, on day two, we screened Dreamcatcher with our commentary that you did, you joined us with. So I think you're pretty ingrained in the show. You know, okay, that's pretty special if you're going to be wrapped into, you know, the memorial for the untimely early death of one of the co-hosts and be kind of ingrained in that way. You
know? I will say that a major honor for me. And if I was the worst part of that whole event, then, of course, I would be happy about that.
Yes, that was really fun. I'd never listened to one of our commentaries. One, I never listened back to it other than,
sure,
you know, getting it ready and making sure that we didn't like say something that needs to be removed for our cancellation sake or something.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But I've never listened to it with a crowd, and that's what we did. We screened Dreamcatcher with the commentary that we did with, it was you, me, Winter Mitchell, and Eric Peacock, and,
yes,
Scott, of course. And it was one of the more rowdy ones, and I knew that it was rowdy, but I'd never watch it with people, and hearing people react to it, it was like going to see, you know, I don't know, like prime Judd Apatow, where it's just a laugh a minute.
Oh, you, man, know,
I
great.
I think we killed it.
Oh, I'm, good.
And by we, I mean mostly you,
no,
for keeping things lively.
No. I remember it feeling very unhinged in the moment in a way that I love. So
yes,
I'm glad that actually also happened when everyone watched it.
Yes, it did. And so you were there in spirit, and we definitely appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I wish I could have been there. It sounds like a very wonderful time. Were there snacks?
There, it was the Alamo, so we had full food service. There, yeah, was okay, beverages. Okay. You could get alcoholic beverages if,
oh,
you,
wow,
so desired.
Okay, okay.
Popcorn, burgers, yes, pizza.
Ayo.
Whatever, okay, you, right, want. You know, it's, if we were truly doing it in honor of Pop-Pop, we would have all eaten about a third of what came and left the rest and then just filled the rest of our bellies with White Claw. But I don't think we all lived as the way Scott did. So
copy that. Okay, great. Well, I'm glad it happened.
I wouldn't advise it. Probably not the best for your health.
Okay.
To persist on a diet of White Claw, weed edibles and I don't know, a bagel every once in a while.
I get it. The only thing I eat is egg whites. That's the only thing I have.
So. I know. Yeah. I remember we would always give you a little a little nonsense because you got like super ripped for your Suicide Squad appearance. So we're just like, hell yeah.
Listen, doesn't match my personality at all, but I'm just doing it and here we are.
Have you kept up with the rippedness? Because I know that.
Yes, because listen, I'm also now just a major man of routines, you know? So now I just do this routine. If you gave me a terrible routine, which is like smoke 20 packs of cigarettes a day, I would now be just puffing on Marlboros. But instead, I'm ingesting egg whites and pumping protein powders.
That's how we keep getting you back on the show, because now it's part of your routine. You're like, I can't say no. That's now. Right.
That's correct. This has become a part of my quarterly routine. So thank you.
Well, you must check in with the KingCast.
Oh, yes.
Well, we do appreciate it. I can't tell you how psyched we were when, because I don't think Scott was familiar with you whenever I was like, hey, we got to get Flula on the show.
Yeah.
And he was like, huh, okay. And I'm like, he's this guy. And I sent like a couple of clips. Like, you have that great clip. I think, are you on Conan where you're talking about Hans Gruber? Is that a different late night?
Well, I'm obsessed. And so it is very likely that I did also discuss this with Conan. Yes. Mm-hmm.
There was some clip there and he was just like, oh, word. And he was like, oh, in. And he was so delighted. You came in and talked Carrie. And then when we asked you to describe the plot of Carrie, it became probably the single funniest thing that's ever been on the show. And so once you did that, the hooks were set and we weren't going to let you run away, even if you wanted to. So,
well, I apologize and also thank you at the same time.
So even though the first time we brought you onto the show,
yes,
it was for probably one of the top tier King movies, right?
Yes.
Carrie, it's kind of hard to argue with De Palma, right? Like, you in those early days, it was like De Palma and Kubrick. Those are the people adapting King.
Yes.
Not so much a little bit later. And we tend to maybe sidle you, since you are such a very funny gentleman, with some of the more wacky King titles now. See Dreamcatcher commentary, see your Maximum Overdrive episode.
Brilliant movies, wonderful films. How did they not win Oscars?
And so we decided to kind of top all that and say, you know what? It should be Lawnmower Man that is the topic for discussion. And you know what? I didn't even fucking remember that we've already made you do a Lawnmower Man bit for the show.
Do you want to know? I did not even know that. You just told me this, and it's as if you told me that for the first time. Really? I've watched this before?
You have never watched this movie, but we made you read the story.
That's cool.
And I didn't realize this either. So the program that I use is this little thing called Zencastr, which is kind of like Zoom, but it's built specifically for podcasting.
Yes.
And, you know, to set up one of these rooms, it's fairly simple. Say, hey, I want to set up a room. They go, okay. And you go, what do you want this room to be called? I said, The Lawnmower Man with Flula Borg. And it says, good sir, you cannot have the same name. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I looked it up, and we had one of our anniversary shows for The Night Shift, where we had guests come in for 5 minutes and talk about a story in a short story collection.
Yes.
And we had given you The Night Shift, or the Lawnmower Man short story to cover. And I re-listened to that audio actually before doing this, and you kind of killed it. So,
well, let me just tell you, Eric, I have no memory of this. And I think it's also like, you know how books and movies sometimes are not matching?
Mm-hmm.
Because I watched The Lawnmower Man and it did not trigger the story, The Lawnmower Man, at all. I can assure you they felt very different inside my tiny German brain.
Let me do a quick little recap for you, because part of what we did in that Night Shift anniversary episode that we did was try to describe to you how insane the adaptation was. And I don't think you believed us. You believe us for sure now.
Now I do, yes.
But let me give you a refresher. The short story is all about an angry Republican man who doesn't want to mow his lawn, and it grows too big, and his wife is like nagging at him about it. And so he says, finally, fuck it, I'll hire somebody to do it.
Yes.
And he hires a company, and a very large man in overalls shows up to mow his overgrown lawn, and doesn't think much of it. And then he looks out in the backyard, and the lawnmower is going, you know, being pushed by itself while the large, talking like gigantically fat man is now buck naked on all fours going behind the lawnmower eating the leftover mulch.
Yes.
And there's a particularly disturbing part of this where he like goes out of his way to make the lawnmower run over a mole, I think. And then he eats the mole carcass. And it turns out that there's like this whole thing has got like Greek mythology overtones, and that the lawn mowing company is run by Pan, and this guy works for Pan, and all this stuff. It's really funny that if you, this isn't ringing a bell now, then this must have gone in one ear and out the other totally, because I re-listening to that episode that we, or that little chunk from that, that anniversary episode, like you described this in great detail and you were so good at it.
Oh, good. Yeah. I am like the person at school who has a test about, you know, biodiversity. And so he memorizes all of the species of birds.
Yeah.
And then the next day cannot name what a swan is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you memorize for the test and it goes right out. That's what we're trained to do. So,
oh yes, I'm a sponge that can't absorb nothing.
Well, I guess the good news for you then is that, you know, now that you've watched the movie adaptation, that, you know, that's only going to stick around for what, another week or two in your brain.
Maximum. You've rounded up, and thank you.
So I apologize for making you watch this. Originally, we were going to bring in your Suicide Squad co-star Steve Agee to be my guest co-host. But unfortunately, he is well, fortunately for Steve, but unfortunately for us, you know, he's busy working on Peacemaker 2 right now, the second season of Peacemaker. And and his schedule changed at the last minute. So, you know, I apologize to the people that I can't be as funny as Steve. But I will say that, you know, Steve... Steve ended up having to watch this fucking movie, and he watched the director's cut. And so, you know, he's paid his penance, and maybe because he doesn't get to exercise the demons that we're about to exercise here on this episode, he might have to live with it a little longer. So
I am slightly concerned. That is also almost 3 hours long. I saw this, the director's cut. It's very long.
It's like, I think it's just over, just under 2:30. It is unbelievable.
It feels
and it's
like
also the
hours.
Only one that's easily found out there. You know, you can rent the theatrical, but you have to like dig and pay for it. You can watch the director's cut for free.
Well, I didn't want to say, because Steve emailed us and said, I watched the director's cut. I found the full normal one on YouTube for free. That's
well,
where I
perfect.
Watched it. So yeah, I feel very lucky. Lucky ducky.
Well, you're a pirate.
Yes, I
and
am.
you've just admitted to a felony on air. I appreciate it.
Got that cinematic booty. You know how it goes.
The watching this movie for free is the way to do it. So you going into this, you had no idea other than I was like, hey, especially since you didn't remember the short story, I was like, hey, Flula, come on the Kingcast and you should talk about the Lawnmower Man.
Yes.
So I think the only thing I told you was that there were going to be VR murder chimps and Pierce Brosnan had an earring.
Yeah,
I think that's all that you knew going into this. So
that is what you told me. I immediately tuned this out because it also sounded too insane. So I just watched it and let it wash over me, you know, like a barrel in Niagara Falls.
So I want to know your impressions of this, but
yes,
you know, just for the people who I didn't force to rewatch this.
Okay.
Can you explain what the Lawnmower Man movie is?
Yes. Okay. So this is a cinematic film starring Timothy Dalton and Carrot Top. Carrot Top is a man that is cutting all of the grasses around the prairie, the ferns, the sunflowers. He is also an idiot. He is doing this for many, many minutes. And all of a sudden, he sees Victoria Jackson from early 90s SNL call to him and say, would you like to smooch me in the face? Please give me your tongue. He then proceeds to do this. And then Timothy Dalton says, hold my phone, Jones. I have been talking with Hank Schrader from Breaking Bad via a very shitty FaceTime feed. And he has said, I have hired NoHo Hank. So there are two Hanks in this film. NoHo Hank will be observing me as I privately put on a very strange suit, which was from, have you seen that film with Tim the Toolman Taylor about planets? What, the Galaxy Quest? So it's the outfit from Galaxy Quest, but he's stuck in a double circle helix. And so he invites Carrot Top to do this. And then Carrot Top can all of a sudden only play Super Nintendo era video games. And in the end, oh, that's right. We begin with a monkey. The monkey is rude and explodes. But anyway, back to the present tense. Carrot Top then begins playing 18-bit Super Nintendo. And in the end, he explodes everything in the world. But then at the very, very end, everyone is sad. But then we realize that Carrot Top has become a telemarketer and starts ringing phones all across the world. Credits.
Yes, that is the actual synopsis, I think, on Wikipedia, what that title is.
I literally read that from Wikipedia. So if you don't like that, then don't donate every year when they ask you, okay?
It's hard to explain what this, and I feel a little bit, it makes me feel old watching this movie because yes. I saw this thing when it came out. Like, I went to the movie theater to watch
you
this.
Did.
I remember this era where that, there was probably about a 6-month period of time where the VR CGI imagery in this movie was cutting edge technology.
I know it is a problem because we are now, obviously now it looks so terrible in a way that is just confusing, as if is this a joke on us? And then I imagined you now as a child watching this on a very large screen. That sounds absolutely terrifying, but also simultaneously very boring.
There was a period of time in the early to mid 90s where horror got really fascinated with computers and stuff. So there's like The Ghost in the Machine was a movie about a serial killer whose ghost like goes and lives in computers and on the internet. And then like will make stuff kind of Final Destination style happen that's connected. It's a little Maximum Overdrive-y, I guess.
Oh, like it won't let you save files in time or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Okay. It will like turn on, it'll somehow push a kid into a pool and then turn on the pool cover, the automatic pool cover to like drown him in the pool, you know.
The computer will do this with like its mouse, the keyboard. What is the mechanism?
If it's connected to electricity, I guess that must mean it's connected to the internet.
So there was stuff
like that. There was a movie called Brain Scan. Have you ever heard of this one?
Brain Scan? No.
So Edward Furlong, hot off the success of Terminator 2 Judgment Day, starred in this horror movie called Brain Scan, where they were like, you know what? Freddy Krueger's old and boring. Why don't we have a digital Freddy Krueger? And so we have this monster guy that like looks like a punk rock monster, you know, like burn victim. Who is a demon that lives in computers. So there was something going on in Hollywood at this time, and I can't really explain it other than, hey, new technology, fascinating. This is what the kids like, and the kids are the one buying the tickets.
Yeah.
Maybe that's as far as it goes, but there was something going on.
Oh, I remember one with, was it Russell Crowe and perhaps Denzel Washington? I may be confusing everyone, but there's like one of them becomes a robot and everyone rides.
Correct, Russell Crowe is Sid. It's like Sid 2.0, 6.7 or some shit.
Yeah.
Is that Virtuosity? I think that's the name of that movie.
Oh, that sounds right. And then also there's one with Sandra Bullock and perhaps Dennis Miller, where they both like are sending viruses to each other
Something.
Yes. Not about basketball, by the way.
No. I mean, shit's all over the... And, you know, it's so funny how lightning fast all that stuff was changing. Like we did Scott and I did this appearance on a Mission Impossible show called Light the Fuse, where we were talking about the very first one.
Yes.
And, you know, because, you know, Brian De Palma directed the first Mission Impossible film. And then, you know, he directed Carrie, the first Stephen King film. So it's like, hey, there's the connection. Easy.
Yeah.
And I rewatched it. And there's like this whole sequence where Ethan Hunt has to figure out somebody via like their email address and nobody can track him. And he just realizes that like the bad guy or the mole or whatever just has their email, you know. It's just like the whole secret is finding out their email and realizing that it's a biblical reference or something. And it's like right now it's something that people, you look back on it now, it's just like, oh, that's like just opening up a Gmail, you know, app and then going click who sent this. That's as deep as it goes. But back then it was like, oh my God, he's doing computer things.
Well, that was weird. Yeah, because like speaking of Bibles and emails, that's what Mission Impossible was. It's Tom Cruise writing Job 3:14 and he's going to all these message boards.
Yep.
Man, yeah, that was very much an era of electronics that are easily cheated now.
Yeah. There we go. We got the Job connection bringing us right back to Lawnmower Man.
Ding
look at how
dong.
That, look at how that works.
Wow. Welcome.
So So at what point in this movie did you know you were in for a rough ride? Was it right away, or was it a growing realization that this is a very interesting and dated artifact of its time?
Eric, this was immediate. As you said, when I read your email twice after I watched it, yes, it's about a chimpanzee who's basically decked out in laser tag helmet and gear and running around in a Max Headroom meets Wolfenstein 3D kind of set. It's very confusing. The monkey sounds are very weird. It's like the worst Predator effects of all time. I don't understand. How did the security guard not understand? Yeah, he wants your weapon. He's a trained, violent monkey. Mm-hmm. How did this I don't want to misspecies him. Was he a chimpanzee? We don't know. He was a marsupial. What are those called?
I think he's a chimp.
Primate. Sorry, primate. Yes. Anyway, that once you begin with this, I've gotten confused. And then there was the idiot Carrot Top, who then, like Carrot Top, got increasingly more jacked. Like he was a hot smoke show there.
Yep.
Very confusing. And I also liked in the truck when he's playing those CDs in the CD player. And listen, I have played with CDs before. It takes several seconds for a CD to begin to play. So
correct. Yeah.
Very inaccurate. And I love that the child is like, you're not playing it long enough to enjoy it, which I enjoyed.
As kids do, you know, it's like, the kids are the ones with the attention spans, right?
They're telling you have ADHD. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
You know, we've kind of established that the short story has nothing to do with the movie. I'll do just a very quick reminder for the listener that this was a script that had absolutely nothing to do with Stephen King's story ended up only getting made because they could slap Lawnmower Man and Stephen King's name on it. And, and then they threw in, there's like two sequences, I think, in the entire thing where they pull from the King story. And one of them's with the lawnmower that kills the abusive stepdad.
Yes, it jumps off the porch.
And it does.
Yes.
After chasing him around the house first, which is straight out of the story. And then the detective that comes out, who is the dude from Ace Ventura, the cop from Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Roger Pedacta. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, that dude plays a cop and he comes in and he's like, it's like, oh, we found pieces of him in the bird bath, which is, again, just directly ripped from the short story.
Oh, man. I loved it. Yeah. And then he has all of the powers. He's like tying the one bully up in gas station hoses. He's telling
Barry Carey style, right?
Yes, and then he's pulling that, Bon Jovi? Obi-Wan Kenobi, this is not the droids you're looking for. It's like, no, these are not the murders you're looking for. This is it's so confusing. I loved it.
It's fucking batshit. Like, this whole thing. So one thing that I wanted to ask you about is not only do we get lots of great 90s fashion, but Pierce Brosnan, one, proving he's one of the most handsome men to ever exist in this film. He's got the long flowing hair.
Oh yes, gorgeous earrings.
The earring.
Yes.
Once you see the earring, you can't unsee the earring. Do you think James Bond probably would have been better? Do you think his later Bond movies would have been better received if he had kept the earring?
Oh yes, like Die Another Day would have just been like, no, don't never die. Christmas will come 8 times a year with that earring. Zero problems there. Also, I must say, listen, a very carpeted chest in a way that I was not ready for from Pierce. That's lots of hair, and I respect it, is all I can say.
And Job? Not so much. Job.
Waxed clean, Job. And then, I'm glad. Oh, that was weird. What was his boss? He was a priest or something, but he lived in a church? Very confusing. Where was the church? Like, I needed a land map of where these buildings are in relation to each other.
You know, I don't know how things are run in Germany, Flula, but here every church has a little hobo shed in the back where a mentally challenged person lives, where the priest can beat him mercilessly whenever they want. So
yeah, we have other issues, but no, we don't have hobo sheds located next to our churches. I feel very confident about saying. Yeah.
I want to kind of stress that Pierce Brosnan's actually pretty good in this. Like, he's really treating this like it's a real movie.
Yes.
And so is Jeff Fahey. But unfortunately, Jeff Fahey is going for it in such a way at the beginning. I think it's actually watching this, and listen, I don't want to give too much credit here and praise the simple Jack portion of Job's arc here, but sure. But watching it on this this new rewatch for this recording, yeah. I was kind of struck at just how well he was doing the childlike thing, where it felt kind of way more authentic than I remembered it being. And listen, I already hear the people getting on their keyboards now. It's like, and all that, that whole section is a bad idea, bad idea, the way that it's done. But I was struck by at least Fahey was going for an angle that wasn't as problematic as it could have been. He was playing way more childlike versus the mentally handicapped, which is where I think maybe his wardrobe was leading,
So I agree with everything you have said. I was very confused by the wardrobe, that it looked like he went directly to Old Navy, purchased those things, and then did nothing else but shoot these scenes. It's like the cleanest outfit I've ever seen from any human person on earth, and only one suspender is on. You don't know how to do two. It's just the second suspender. You don't need. That's very confusing to me. Was it a fashion statement? Do we know this? Was he trying to communicate some kind of style? I don't know.
Yeah, he's a Zoolander character in the wrong movie.
This checks out. Yeah, no, I agree with you, though. I always am thinking these people are shooting. There is a moment where while he is doing this, there are 20 people on the other side, and like many of them are nodding in approval and thinking, yeah, that's right. Yeah, very good job. Yeah, okay, good. And cut. Yeah, we got it. That's it. I just feel like the beginning, sometimes I've gone on a road trip and I've decided on the terrible destination. And that's just what happened, I feel like. They're like, oh, they all went on this road. They shouldn't have driven there. They should have selected something else. Hoover Dam, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's hard to talk about this movie without that. But there's also, did you get kind of weirded out at the beginning of this movie? Like with the way that Pierce Brosnan was interacting with both Job and Job's like kid friend, where there's like this whole sequence, and maybe I watched the director's cut. I pulled a Steve Agee and I watched the director's cut here. Maybe
you.
It's a little bit more pronounced here, but there's like a moment where he's like trying to he's like, "Hey, Job, you want to come play a game in my basement?"
Yeah,
and I was just like, "Oh no, this is." Making me very uncomfortable, Pierce
yes,
Brosnan.
It was weird, and he is weird in this. And I think it helps that he looks like Pierce Brosnan. You know, so it's like, oh, I guess once again, he's an attractive and not strange-looking person can get away with it. Like if he looked like the man from the book, you know, the man that eats the mulches, no one is going to that man's basement to play Super Mario Brothers. Like,
right.
in no world will this happen. But Pierce Brosnan just finished GoldenEye, I think, around this. He was shooting James Bond as this happens. Is this correct? Like, this is the same era of Pierce Brosnan. Is that right?
It's very close. I think GoldenEye was, what, 90?
Six?
Yeah, this is 92. So this is just before.
This is
right before the Bond thing. No way this movie happens if it was made a couple of years later.
That's
not
true.
Not with Pierce Brosnan.
That's correct. Yeah, this is like Remington Steele or whatever.
Yes,
it was.
This is. Hey, yeah, I'm a TV star. Let me star in a movie. What's it about?
Oh,
dangerous VR. You know, of mice and men mixture.
Yeah. Okay, well,
fuck
the
it, I'll do it.
Yeah, fine, I'll do it. I mean, this is a different era, of course. He just in bed just begins to smoke a cigarette like the person next door would not absolutely hate this. Just very crazy. I guess maybe they're both smokers. I don't know.
Could be.
Yeah.
But this is also the very tail end of when smoking was like agreed upon. Like I'm old enough to remember not smoking on airplanes. That had kind of gone away by the time that I was flying as a kid. But all the none of the planes.
Oh, ashtrays.
Were retrofitted. So every plane I went on had an ashtray in the handle. Yeah.
Oh, yes. That armrest ashtray. I remember this. Yeah. Yeah. I stored several tiny toys in there as a child.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I did a trip. It was something in like Eastern Europe or something. I went on some junket or set visit or something where I had to, like, I flew into London and then I had to fly into like a small airport. So I took like whatever the regional flight was. And this was maybe in the early 20 teens. And whatever old ass plane I was on, guess what it had? It had the ashtrays and the armrests.
You know how old this plane is.
And suddenly I was just like, I wonder if the engine's as old as ashtray and the armrest is.
Yeah, don't think too hard. Just pray for a soft landing. Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of fucking smoking in this movie.
There is a lot. Yeah, that's true. I also, the boss of Carrot Top, you know who I'm speaking of, the lawn mowing man. He also looks
Mr. very Fahey to you, sir.
Sorry, Mr. Fahey. There's his boss person. He feels like from the Andy Griffith Show or something like this. Do you know who this was?
Do you mean the guy he mows lawns with, the nice guy, or the asshole priest guy?
Nice guy. Yeah, no, not the priest that is literally burned. The nice guy. Yes.
Yes, that's Jeffrey Lewis. He's a character actor. He's Juliet Lewis, you know, that actress, that's her father.
Oh, the dad. I got it. Nice.
Yes, yeah. And he's good. He's got some Stephen King connections too, because he's in Salem's Lot, the Tobey Hooper Salem's Lot as well.
Oh.
Yeah, he plays a roughneck, you know, small town, you know, he's got leathery skin, he works with his hands, that kind of person.
Yeah.
So he's a prime Stephen King character.
Absolutely, yeah. Zero SPF, lots of calluses. And you say he played Tommy Salem?
Yes, he played Tommy Salem. He played a character that gets turned into a vampire fairly early on, and he has a very disturbing scene where he's sitting in a rocking chair addressing somebody that walks into the room.
Oh, like at a cracker barrel. Perfect.
Yes. He was playing that weird little peg game that's at Cracker Barrel I still don't understand.
No one knows. No one knows how to play it, yeah.
You won. I did. I don't know how.
Certainly. Great. Give me my chicken and dumplings, please.
Yes. Yeah. Now give me my meal made with 3 sticks of butter.
Oh, good. So delicious. So delicious.
It fucking is good.
Good gravy.
Yeah. So I always like that dude. I think he's a really good presence. And it's refreshing that there's not everybody around Job is a complete shithead. So, you know, I like that he had the dude that was looking after him, who of course gets fucking shot in the chest at the end for no reason.
Yeah, that was a bummer.
But, you know, I think that whole thing is, it's all about stripping Job. You know, at that point, he's ascending and becoming like VR Hitler and, you know, and he's just wanting to, you know, the whole thing is like, let's shed everybody that's, you know, a good influence on his life, except for the little boy who is.
Yes, he survives.
He does. And is also the thing that kind of triggers what's left of Job's humanity, you know, at the end. True. So.
I can say, I know Hank Schrader has been in other things pre-Breaking Bad. Like, I think he's in Lethal Weapon as one of the other cops and stuff. So to see him like this, like, normally he plays like roughy, toughy, copy guys, you know, in my mind. Or isn't he like one of the hobbling guys from The Firm? Like, he's chasing... not Jerry Maguire. What's his... Cole Trickle? No, that's the other... What's... Mitch McDear. Just to see him like very dapper and like almost like a British aristocrat, I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, he's like 1984, right? He's just like, for the most of his screen time, he's just a giant face on a wall, you know, on a video wall.
That took how long? He shot for 3 days, let's say maximum.
You know, and this is where it's going to come into play, where, you know, how much of my memory of the original versus what I watched in the director's cut is true, because he's in the director's cut a lot more. And there's a lot of scenes where he's not just a face on the screen.
Oh.
He's like in person, you know, talking to people and having meetings with Pierce Brosnan and shit.
Yes. Oh, there was one meeting. So was that in the cut that I saw? My cut was weirdly hosted by a British couple dressed in goth. And it felt like Elvira, mistress of the you know, UK dog.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because I saw that as I was scrolling through YouTube too.
Yes, that's how I watched it. So it's like Nick at Night, but, you know, maybe they spelled the Nick with a K at the beginning. Whatever they do in England, it was great.
And no Gilbert Gottfried at the top there?
Zero Gilberts, zero Godfreys. That's correct. Yeah.
Well, that's... you know, I think at this point, like, we were joking, I think, before we started recording about Total Recall, because Flula made a sound that sounded like Arnold Schwarzenegger pulling a giant ball out of his nose in Total Recall.
Yeah.
But Dean Norris is in Total Recall, and I remember clocking him in that. He's one of the mutants.
Is he in the three-breasted scene or something else?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. One of the mutants that's working for Quato. Yeah. But he's also in Terminator 2. And this is something that's really hard to miss once you see it, but you can easily, you could easily overlook it because he's one of the SWAT guys that goes in when Miles Dyson's dying. And he's the one that's like, get out now, now, or whatever. When he's like, I can't hold this, you know?
Yes. Yeah. He's like breathing heavy, having that asthma attack.
Yeah.
Oh, he's in that?
He is the main SWAT guy, in there that's leading that. He's probably the guy that killed Miles Dyson. So
that's messed
up. I don't feel bad for, you know, spoilers, what happens in Breaking Bad anymore. So fuck that guy.
Yeah, he finally got his desserts. Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, so that, did you recognize anything there? You not being chronically online in the Stephen King way that I am.
Yes, that's
correct. This might have gone over your head, but the company that he works for, this is another big Stephen King reference. They say that the Pierce Brosnan character is working for the shop, which is something that factored in to a lot of very early King stuff and that he dropped.
Oh,
the shop is where is the thing that's after Charlie McGee in the in Firestarter. So they're like the secret government agency that is like investigating supernatural stuff. And it's essentially, if you've seen Stranger Things, what that is where Eleven comes from, is essentially a direct lift of Stephen King's secretive government agency. Yeah.
I assume it's based in Bangor, Maine.
I'm sure that they're everywhere. The shop is everywhere, Fluva. Oh,
okay. This is not the LeBron James interview show. This is a very different thing. And it's not spelled PPE, I assume, at the end.
No.
That's not a place where I get mint chocolate chip
either. No. That sells Christmas ornaments year round, not one of ye old shoppies.
No shoppies. Okay. I did not catch this reference, but as you know, I am a local idiot. I'm a human walking lawnmower, man, minus the God complex.
With slightly better fashion sense. Let's give yourself some credit there.
Okay, but that's a very low bar. That's very easy. Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, it's really interesting just kind of knowing the origins of this project, and that it didn't have fuck all to do with Stephen King, and so much so that King sued to have his name taken off of this thing twice.
What? Really?
He did, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I get it. It's all I can say.
You get it. Even if it was a direct adaptation, you'd still maybe want to have your name taken off of
it. It would have been 8 minutes long. This would have been like one of those Pixar movies where that lamp hops up and down and then the actual movie begins, you know?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Wow. No, I guess the story there is that he saw the movie and was like, this has nothing to do with my story. And they were using Stephen King's name in the trailers and like all this stuff. And he was just like, nope, you're not going to use my name because this doesn't resemble anything that I'd written. Yeah. And it doesn't. He's
true.
Right on. He's not being a fucking difficult artist. He's legitimately correct.
Yes.
It's like, it has zero to do with his stuff. So he sued to have his name taken off. And I guess my understanding is the home video release, somebody okayed a poster and like the VHS cover to say Stephen King's The Lawnmower Man.
Wow.
And he sued him again. And I'm curious. And I wonder if anybody's ever asked him this, but like, I would think that there is a possibility that Stephen King has made more money on The Lawnmower Man than he has on just about any other single thing of his, because he got directly paid. He got paid up front for the advert, you know, for the fee to, you know, whatever his fee is to, you know, for the rights to a story. And then he got to sue them for damages for putting his name on the movie for the theatrical release. And I think he won millions in the suit.
Wow.
And had had his name taken off. And then I think he won like double the amount of money that he had won the first time around when he sued him for the home video thing. So I think that it's very feasible that Stephen King made more money on The Lawnmower Man than just about anything else he's ever released.
This is very impressive, I have to say. This is insane. Wait, I know this has nothing to do with lawn mowing or men or this movie. Is there something that Stephen King has made or written that you're like, why has this not yet become a film or television show? I'm very TO'd about that.
Oh, there's a few options in there. We usually like to champion a book he wrote called Revival on the show, and it would make a hell of a movie, but that's not one I don't understand why it didn't get made. It's got a bummer ending. It's got a great ending, but it's a fucking bummer.
Okay.
Yeah. I understand why that one's hard to get made. The thing that blows my mind that still hasn't been adapted is something that Steven Spielberg owns the rights to, and that's The Talisman. which is this kind of epic, it's a huge book. It's like an 800-page book, but it's a young adult story, you know, about a boy that's traveling across country to save his mother. But he has the ability to flip between our reality and a mirror world where every one of us has a twinner in it. So,
okay.
And so as he's traveling, he's being pursued in both realities by people. So he's in our world. He's being pursued by, you know, official government kind of style people. And then he flips over and he's being pursued by like the evil henchman to the like the magician in this court. So it's kind of like this. It's got werewolves in it. It's got, yeah, I mean, it's all sorts of bonkers, but Spielberg bought the rights in the 80s and has never made it. Now he's tried multiple times and like to, he's hired, God, there's must've been at least half a dozen people have been hired to write a screenplay of it. They've tried movies, they've tried miniseries. And nothing. For whatever reason, it never happened, but they announced a couple of years ago that the Duffer Brothers, of Stranger Things fame.
Yes.
Are doing it with Spielberg producing for Netflix, and that they're going to do it right after they wrap this current season of Stranger Things, which will be the final one, I think, that they're involved with. So,
and to be clear, Stranger Things, these are all now postgraduates. These children are now in their 30s, correct?
Yeah, they all have mustaches and are, you know, are worried about their quarterly taxes. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. They're accepting 1099s. Filing out the W-2. Yep. Perfect. Great.
Millie Bobby Brown got married. That's like, you know, she's it's like, yep, they're adults now.
Okay.
I think one of them's getting in trouble for having some problematic opinions on the whole Israel Palestine thing. So it's like,
okay,
you know, they're getting old enough to get canceled is what I'm saying.
That's right. That's how you know you're old enough. You're now cancelable. I get it. Okay, great. Great news. Yeah. Talisman, I will read it immediately.
It's great. He co-wrote it with a guy named Peter Straub. I don't know if that rings a bell, but he wrote a very popular book in the early 80s, late 70s called Ghost Story.
No. Okay.
And so I think it was the first time King co-wrote something with somebody else. And he wrote The Talisman with Peter Straub. So there's because of that, it does feel a slightly fractured, that there's lots of Stephen King-isms in there and lots of stuff that doesn't feel like King. And I think that's...
You can see it.
The give and take. But it's a book I loved when I was growing up, but it's, you know, King's really good at writing kid protagonists. So
yes. Oh yeah. Not the stand, but it. Good yeah. gravies.
Yeah. Stand by me. The Stand by Me is what you meant to say.
That's what I meant. Yeah. The Stand by Me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. And so he also wrote Bachman Turner Overdrive with his son. Is this correct?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. He's done Maximum Overdrive. He wrote as Richard Bachman. And yes, he has a son.
Thank you. Listen, that's all I need. I need you to translate me. That's all I need.
Well, you know what's funny, though, is that Bachman Turner Overdrive is the inspiration for his pen name, Richard Bachman. Yeah.
What?
So you weren't wrong.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I love when, listen, an idiot is correct like a clock, whatever that they call it. A clock has strikes midnight. Big Ben has two fingers, whatever.
Yeah. Circling back to Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
What can you tell me what your favorite god-awful digital effect is in this movie? Do you have one? Because I have one that, like, it stands out to me every single time I see it.
Oh, please tell me. What is it?
I can't get over when he turns all the Job gets so powerful that he becomes a big floating head that can turn Secret Service guys into Dippin' Dots.
That was nice. I have to say the Dippin' Dot effect was very, it made me slightly, made me want to go to a Cleveland area mall. It's what I have to say. I will say, like, when the Reverend or whatever was put aflame, I was like, this is so bad, the graphic, that it can't, like, there's better... I was confused, as it must be on purpose how bad these flame effects are with the Reverend or Pope. What was he? Was he the Pope? He was somebody
he was
in
not
a religion.
The Pope.
No,
for
you're
sure.
right. Yeah, that's correct. It wasn't the Pope.
I understand exactly what you're talking about. The scene stands out.
Yes.
I think that they were going for, hey, this is going to look, you know, crazy because it's computer, it's virtual reality fire, not real fire. But that's me really trying to stretch and cover their ass on this. I don't know if it's that they put that much thought into it, to be honest.
Very good. I will say just his face in general when he was like the face in the reality, the VR, what AR.
When he was the polygon, when he was like the, I don't know, the thing that you're shooting the eyes at in Star Fox. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very, it's like, you know, if you take, like in the film about football playing criminals who also surf, starring Patrick, oh God.
Swayze, yes.
Yes, and Johnny Utah. And yep. they put the, I know they wear president masks, but sometimes they put on the nylons that legs that women or whoever puts on their mm-hmm. legs.
Yep.
That is what his face looked like.
Right.
You know, that's uh-huh. it. That's all I was trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Son, you got a panty on your head.
Yeah, exactly. That's correct. Let's rob banks or whatever it was Job did. Job. Yeah.
Job.
Crazy.
It's, I guess for better or worse, the movie has an identity, right? Like, I look at that, and if I see anything like that, the polygons yes. in that virtual world, I instantly think Lawnmower Man.
Lawnmower, yeah. Now I will as well. It was very interesting. It's not like Max Headroom. No, this has its own very specific, insane vibe.
Flula, if I was to tell you that there is a Lawnmower Man 2,
no.
Would you believe me?
No.
Well, you should, because I'm telling you the truth. If you...
What?
What would you think Lawnmower Man 2 would be? Like, you've seen this movie, you know, it has that big ending where he's kind of trapped, but he lets Pierce Brosnan and the kid go because the whole building's going to blow up, and his humanity is like, save the kid, you know, the kid is great.
Save the kid, eat the cannoli, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's exactly what he says.
That's what he said.
As he's randomly searching for a back door that he finds to get out. And then he, like you said, he becomes a telemarketer and he makes the phone call he promised to everybody in the world to show that he's still alive and living in the net. So with that ending, what do you think the sequel would be?
I believe that because he has mastered the art of telephonic technology, he starts what was known as 10-10-220, which allows you to make a 20-minute phone call for 99 cents. And if you don't believe me, just ask our sponsor, Toby Keith. And I think this is what happened. He then became a multi-billionaire, and then he disappeared, and he has moved, let's just say it, he's moved to Düsseldorf, and he's running a bakery. If you like marzipan, which is in Germany, marzipan, check out Job's Delights.
That is a much better idea for a sequel.
What, right? I would watch this. I would visit. I mean, how much business would Job's Delights get on Fahrerstraße down there in Düsseldorf, you know?
Well, and, you know, he wouldn't need to market because all he's got to do is call everybody at once and tell them, hey, the new strudel's in.
Strudel's in. It's called King Strudel. Steven sued me again.
So do you think that there's anything in the movie that you watch that would say, you know what, 3 years later, everybody's going to live in a Blade Runner world, a post-apocalyptic rundown Blade Runner world? Do you think that would be something that you would expect in a sequel?
In 1,000 days, it's become Blade Runner?
I guess to give the film credit, I think they say several years later.
Okay.
Los Angeles is a dystopia, and the film follows the boy in the movie as he and his hoodlum teenager friends are trying to, like, I don't know, damn the man. They're like little rascals that are trying to rebel against the oppressive stuff, and Job kind of comes into play as and not played by Jeff Fahey anymore. He's played by Matt Frewer this time around.
Okay.
And he kind of comes into play in some weird way that I still don't really understand. I've seen this movie. I don't understand the plot, but he, like, is helpful, but then he's not helpful. And then I don't know. Believe it or not, the sequel to Lawnmower Man is a huge mess.
No.
So.
Okay.
Really disappointing. I know. I know you were, when I told you a sequel was happening, you know, was out there that you could watch. I knew you'd already pre-ordered it on iTunes.
I have. Yes. I should reserve watching this film for a day where everything has gone right. And then at the end of the day, I will watch Lawnmower 2. This time we're trimming the hedges. What's the colon? What happens after the Lawnmower 2? What do they have words after that?
Beyond Cyberspace is what it's released as, but I believe that there is a cut or some version of it, or his working title was Job's War.
Got it. I would go with this time we're trimming the hedges, but fine. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's even any fucking grass in Lawnmower Man 2. Because it's all, like I said, it's a Blade Runner post-apocalyptic Los Angeles.
Well, if it's Los Angeles, already there is no grass. Yes, this is just, are we polishing pavement. That's Lawnmower 2. Lawnmower Man 2. I'm excited to watch this, Eric.
No, you shouldn't be. You
really I shouldn't be. Okay, no, I refuse to watch this.
I mean, here, we're going to give you your 2 weeks. You're going to forget all about Lawnmower Man.
That's true.
And then I will say, hey, you know, I'll circle back in December and go, hey, Flula.
Yeah.
You want to watch something really fun for the KingCast?
Yeah. And they'll ask, there was a Lawnmower Man 1? What?
Uh-huh.
Great. Yeah. Perfect. Sounds like me. Great. I'm very excited. Wait, I must ask you this.
Yes.
Was it a box office? How did it do in Lawnmower 2? Did people say, great job? Was the first one so good they said, okay, let's make another? I'm very confused.
You know what? I'm not 100% sure it was ever released in theaters.
Okay. There we go.
Let's see. I'm wrong. It was released January 12th, 1996.
Obviously.
Let's see what Box Office Mojo's got to say about this.
Tell us, Mojo's.
I'm going to bet that it made at least $10.
A safe bet.
All right. Let's see. The first Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
With a budget of $10 million came in, made $32 million worldwide.
Wow.
And of that 32, probably 31 went to Stephen King for all the lawsuits.
Yes. And $10 went to the effects, of course. Yes, yes.
And Lawnmower Man 2.
Yeah.
They did not release a budget for Lawnmower Man 2.
Yeah, yeah.
But it made $1.4 million in its domestic opening and settled in at a worldwide cume of $2.4 million.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That sounds right. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. Just having not seen it and just you've told me what it's about, that sounds like, honestly, it's a roundup. It's fine. Count me in. I'll watch it.
No, I think you just knowing it exists is all I wanted, and I will feel some guilt on my conscience if you actually invest your time into watching this film. I'd rather you watch The Mangler 2.0 than watch Lawnmower Man 2.
Great. It's no longer in beta. I'll watch Mangler 2.0. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever that is. Great.
Jesus. Oh, God, do I have to explain?
Listen, Eric, you don't have to explain anything. You know that I will, in 10 seconds, hit my head on a wall and have forgotten this entire conversation. So you don't have to say anything you don't want to. I'm just releasing you from the hooks.
I appreciate it. But I do want to kind of illustrate, because I do tie The Mangler and Lawnmower Man together a little bit in my head because of Mangler 2.0.
Oh.
So The Mangler is a story. It's based on a King short story. Toby Hooper directed a feature film version with Ted Levine, Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs as the star.
Yes.
And it's all about a giant fucking Tim Burton motherfucker of a laundry press, like just a steel huge laundry press that gets a little evil in it and sometimes eats the laundry workers, right?
Oh.
And fold them up in a nice little human sheets.
Oh,
right. So
does it interfere with the clothing cleaning?
Very much so. When that happens, those linens aren't very clean after a helpless worker falls into the press.
Oh, that's terrible.
Naturally, whenever they made that movie, the movie's not very good, but you know, it's still that premise. It's a big laundry press thing. In the short story, like the thing kind of uproots itself and becomes its own monster and like chases people around. It gets a little ridiculous, but you know, whatever. Yeah. When they decided that they had about $300,000 sitting around and also the rights to say, I'm making a Mangler 2, people decided, you know, what would be really cool is, and we would just turn the Mangler instead of a laundry press, you know, which is kind of scary. This is a giant machine that can break your bones and crush you to death.
Oh, totally. Yes.
The Mangler 2.0 is going to be a computer virus that takes over a military school and like locks doors and follows you around with the security cameras and stuff.
Okay. So it's like rude Siri, basically.
Very rude Siri. So I do kind of associate, you know, one, they're not good movies, but they're also made in the same era where the schlock is still kind of made a little professionally.
Yes.
Right? Because they're shooting on film. You know, this is before the digital revolution. So there is that like kind of tangible feel that you don't get from like if the movie had been made 4 years later, would it look like, you know, all mini DV shit, you know what I mean?
Right. So, yes. So, I imagine there are evenings where people watch both and they call the evening the Lawn Mangler Man.
I don't believe that that's anything that ever happened, but now that you've said it, I kind of need it to happen.
Me as well. Yeah. Let's get that hashtag going, guys. Lawn Mangler Man. Yeah.
So is there anything that you want to talk about more Lawnmower Man stuff before we wrap things up? There's got to be some stone unturned.
Well, I wish, let's be honest, they had overturned more stones in the making of this film.
Correct.
I do like that he beat up the rude boy at the gas station, but I don't think he kill that guy. That guy needed, let's just be the bad guys get their desserts, as we said. I wanted him to expire in a more great, spectacular way. He was the big douche to me, was the rude. Why? He just got strangled and then he like passed out from the fumes of gasoline. What?
Yes. Yeah. You have the floating gas pumps and stuff that are like being very menacing to him.
Yeah. I wanted more like a shot list to be like very rude. Put one of those gas things up his rumpus or into his ear hole. We're working with, we're working with flammable liquids and then we just like slightly tickle him and then benzene him to death. That seems
right. Like, but they use their virtual flame budget up on the priest though, you know?
That's correct.
So I think you just need to consider that there's realities, Flula, that go into the making of these movies. So
listen, to the producers of The Lawnmower Man and also Lawnmower Man 2, I apologize. I did not consider the flame budget that you used on the Pope.
Hmm. Would you play the Doctor's VR games?
Oh, I thought you meant any of the characters in the film.
Yes.
Of course. Hire me for Lawnmower Man 3. Hire me for your Lawn Mangler Man screening MC job. Yes, I will play or do anything at this point, Eric. Listen, it's 20 whatever. I've forgotten the year. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to play. I'm wearing pants.
What would be your preferred role in this? Would you want to play Job or would you want to play the Pierce Brosnan character?
Oh, I would play Pierce Brosnan. I just want to see what does it feel like to have just the most delicious chest. I could smuggle drugs inside there. No one would find them for years on end. I find that to be very amazing. Also, he's a smoke show, even with 18 earrings. I mean, he was basically full on pierced by the end of the film. I love it. Pierced Brosnan.
Pierced Brosnan. Have we done multiple episodes on the Lawnmower Man, made fun of his earring at every chance we get, and have never come up with Pierced Brosnan?
We need to mail it. Tell him now. Tell him immediately, and we will get him on the however many videos or episode podcast that you are talking about this. How many videos have you done? And I say videos. I've lost all sense of time and space. How many things have you done about Lawnmower Men, other than with me these two times?
I'd say between Lawnmower Man and Lawnmower Man 2, we've done probably 4 episodes on it over the course of the show. And we done fucked up. And I can tell you that the one time the listeners were like, hey, y'all, you got to chill on this shit was I had the bright idea of doing Lawnmower Man and then doing the next week Lawnmower Man 2. I'm like, that plays into each other. And by the end of that, people were like, we ain't having this shit. You can't give us half a month worth of Lawnmower Man episodes.
Revolt.
This shit ain't going to fly going forward. You crossed the line and we're letting you know now and don't cross it again. It was a very stern talking to you from the listeners.
I feel very happy that I've now forced your listeners to cross this line yet again. So you're welcome, everyone. I'm very excited. Thank you for letting me watch this film, Eric. It was a very fun time for me. I enjoyed it, kind of.
There's only one more thing that I want to bring up before we wrap this up.
Of course.
You touched on it briefly. What the fuck is up with that lady that had the hots for Job? And she had the hots for Job when he was essentially a grown 6-year-old, right? And she was like flirting with him before he started taking off his shirt and oiling up with Diddy's baby oil and all that stuff. You know,
I was very confused as well. Was she? I didn't know if she was also an idiot. I wasn't certain if that was the goal. And maybe I'm trying to like be generous. Like, oh, he's dressed as you said, very stylish. with the overalls. Perhaps he's just a fashion maven. I felt uncomfortable as they were smooching and she was like, give me your tongue. We gotta have, please, no more, just everyone stop talking. Can we get back to the 16 bits, please?
It's very yes. Good.
Yeah,
I definitely felt like I needed an adult. So there's that conversation. Then there's and again, this might be a director's cut thing. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a conversation that Pierce Brosnan has with Austin O'Brien, the kid's mom, where she's like, you would be a good dad. This is after like a fight with his wife, who's very angry at him for not taking him into the or taking her into the city and playing video games instead.
Correct.
And there's a scene where he's like, she's driving away angrily. And then like, the abused wife next door they're talking about how good the kid is. And she's like, you're so good with him. And he's like, yeah, you know, I wish I had a little boy like that. And she's like, well, you can borrow mine anytime you want. And the way he reacts to it is just like, again, if he didn't look like Pierce Brosnan, you'd be just like, you know, all right, never mind. Maybe we need to check the sex offender registry, where he's like, yes, I like taking your son into my basement.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
It's just like, no, no, sir. No, I don't think that's the correct way to approach that conversation.
That sounds terrible. Why is that in a director's cut? What is the director thinking? And also, if that was in the original, I blacked out several times while watching this movie and came to like the weirdest things, as you can imagine. So I did miss that. And guess what? I'm very happy I missed that.
Yeah. There's a lot more of the there's a lot more of the nagging wife stuff in the director's cut.
Okay. So the director going through a divorce while cutting the director's cut together. It sounds
can right. You refresh my memory? What happens at the beginning of the non-director's cut with the chimp? Like he's in the facility.
In the facility, we have very much that like Naked Gun siren introduction,
right.
But through him wearing that laser tag helmet and a lot of ooh ah ahs or whatever it is that the chimp is saying, and he looks at a gun and it says like gun, go get gun on the screen. And so he takes the gun from the security man and then shoots him. And then already I'm confused because I think at this point, Pierce Brosnan wakes up, smokes, and then gets into an argument. But of course, once more, all of these events have jumbled into my head. So I apologize to everyone who is a huge Lawnmower Man fan.
So what happens to the chimp? Do we ever see what happens to the chimp in this one?
I don't remember. Perhaps did he like book something on like Expedia, maybe?
I think that there's significantly more VR chimp in the director's cut because we stick the chimp is the main character at the beginning. He steals the gun, shoots the security guard.
Yes.
And then like goes on a rampage or is like going on the hunt and runs into Job, and Job thinks he's a character from his comic book. And
oh, wow.
And he like, because he's dressed up like, you know, a laser tag player, just like the fake comic that he's reading.
Yes.
And there's this whole thing where Job's trying to protect him and that he doesn't view Job as a threat. Like he looks at his pupil. That's how he knows that Job's not a threat, because his pupil's not dilated in the wrong way, I guess.
Oh, Dilated People's great rap band, by the
way.
Listen, that may have occurred in this cut. I have to tell you, I would wake up and it's still the same, you know, model or what, a Killer Instinct 2 playing on the screen. So it's possible. I can't confirm or deny anything.
Because the only way for me to actually figure this out, and it would be a good idea to kind of do something, it would be a great episode or, you know, either a Lawnmower Man episode or like a bonus episode or something, to go, here's the differences between the director's cut and the original. But that requires me to rewatch both.
Yeah,
keep track of things, and I really don't want to do that. So I was hoping maybe you remembered, so that way I could say, hey, this is what's different at the beginning. But I'm just going to go ahead and say and state as a fact that the chimp is the star of the director's cut, and that's all that you need to know.
That's all. Yeah, listen, your listeners have already said no more Lawnmower Man. So, I mean, that's enough. Don't do it. Stop it.
Well, that's the thing. Now that Scott's not here, all the fucking brakes are off, baby.
Oh,
it's going to
no.
be Lawnmower Man all day, every day at the KingCast going forward.
Scott was the limiting reagent, and now just the EL Fudge Keebler elves are just making those cookies and no one's stopping them. Okay.
You got it exactly right. So stay tuned next week, where Flula's going to come back again and again.
Oh yeah,
and this is going to be your own limbo, Flula, where you're
perfect,
where you're going to live this over and over and over. This is like the worst version of Groundhog Day that you could possibly possibly imagine. It's only watching Lawnmower Man.
Great. Eric, you know I will have forgotten all of this by next Tuesday. So just send me this next Wednesday and I'll be ready to go and chipper as ever.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to make you talk about this fucking movie anymore. Okay. You've done a great job. And is there anything you wanna encourage the folks to do? Visit your socials, perhaps, or send you some, you know, Venmos or
take your smartphone in your left or right hand, open a window, throw it out. That's what I would say. It's my one advice to you for the day.
All right. Yeah. Throw out the $1,000 machine in your hand. I got it.
Just throw it out there. And I guess someone will be out there waiting to grab it and sell it on whoever knows where. But yeah, throw your social media and everything else into an ocean is what I would say. Or if you don't do that, then follow me on Instagram or wherever you like. It's Flula, like you have a flu in Los Angeles. But obviously, don't do any of that. Just have a cupcake. They're delicious.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Flula. And always love having you on the show. And I'm sure... I'll force you back soon enough, and I promise you won't be Lawnmower Man. I'm done with Lawnmower Man. Done with Lawnmower Man. We put in our time, baby. So
great. I mean, again, do whatever you like. I won't remember, and thank you very much for having me.
Many thanks to the legendary, the one, the only, Mr. Flula Borg. Yes, it's another Lawnmower Man episode. Yes, I know we get shit about doing Lawnmower Man so much. But it's such a bonkers goddamn movie, and when you have somebody like Flula Borg at your beck and call, who will come running when you blow the conch shell of ridiculousness, I couldn't not do another Lawnmower Man episode if we could get this dude involved. I promise that if we do cover Lawnmower Man at any other point in the future, it's going to be because there's a crazy chaotic guest to pair with it. So before I let you go, I want to plug the Patreon. We got our bonus episode set for this Friday, as usual, over at patreon.com/thekingcast. And I am welcoming my Ain't It Cool News cohort, Mr. Steve Procopi, also known as Capone, who I've known this guy going back many, 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 many years. He's a big Stephen King nerd, and he watches every goddamn movie that ever comes out. And I thought it would be a good idea for us to review the new Salem's Lot, which is hitting Max, I believe, on October 3rd. So on Thursday, October 3rd, you can watch the brand new Salem's Lot on HBO Max. And then you can wait just a little bit for Friday's bonus episode where Steve and I go through that thing beat by beat and talk about what we liked, what we didn't like. No spoilers. I've seen it at this point. Steve has seen it. And I don't know what his opinion is. I know what my opinion is. And I'm going to leave you hanging. That's how we get you caught up in that suspense and get you to throw us some bucks. So head on over to patreon.com/thekingcast. You will unlock all bonus episodes that we've ever done on the show, access to Discord, all that fun stuff. But we got lots and lots and lots and lots, 4+ years of episodes over there. Notice how I almost said content. We do not use that word around here. So you'll get all that, and then you'll be first in line to check out the review of the brand new Salem's Lot with me and Steve. So yeah, I think that about wraps it up. We will see you for that this Friday and back in the main feeds for some more Stephen King shenanigans next week, next Wednesday. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, adios, folks. The Kingcast is a Fangoria podcast production. The show is produced, hosted, and created by Eric Vespi, that's me, and Scott Wampler. Tira Ansley and Abby Goel are executive producers. Daniel Danger is our art director, and editing is done by yours truly.